welcome to Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, May 31st, 2006. I'm Bill Brenner. In this week's Security Spotlight, a roundtable discussion on the month's top news stories. But first, our top story. Attackers could launch malicious code and gain system-level privileges by exploiting a flaw in Symantec Client Security and Symantec Antivirus Corporate Edition 10. The high-severity flaw was discovered last week by EI Digital Security. Symantec confirmed the problem and developed a fix over the weekend. In its advisory, Symantec said its Norton products are not affected and that it is not aware of any known exploits targeting the flaws. In addition to installing the fixes, Symantec said customers can mitigate the threat by taking a number of actions, including blocking external access at the network boundary unless external parties require service, filtering access to the affected computer at the network boundary if global accessibility is not required, and restricting access to only trusted computers and networks. And now for this week's Security Spotlight. May was an especially eventful month in the world of information security. Topping the headlines was a data theft that put more than 26 million U.S. veterans at risk for identity theft, an anti-spam vendor that surrendered to spammers, a zero-day exploit against a Microsoft app, and a controversy over the future of the CISSP certification. Joining me to discuss these stories are Susan Bradley, an IT professional with Tamiyasu Smith Horn and Braun Accountancy Corp., Stephen Mensick, Senior Principal, Systems Engineer for Raytheon, and Frank Kaniski, an IT Security Specialist for the U.S. Government. Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's start with the VA data theft story. And let me ask you first, who deserves the most blame here? Was it the worker for taking the data home, the VA for not having adequate data security practices, or Congress for not already having better data security laws in place following what happened with such companies as ChoicePoint and Card Systems? Frank, let's start with you on this one.
Well, Bill, the VA has policies in place for this type of thing. When people bring data in or bring devices in that might be able to have data, there's a procedure in which the VA requires its employees after they, bringing in or taking out devices. And from my understanding and working with the VA years ago, they've put in place the same type of airport security where you have to have your bag scanned and x-rayed and you go through a metal detector and empty your pockets out and the whole bit. So if there's any question about any type of data devices that somebody might be carrying around, the guards would have probably identified that. That's if they enforce those. But at times, the VA gets relatively laxed, and
isn't that sometimes true for any firm that we all get lax? You know, we start out, we have great policies and procedures, and then we tend to forget them.
I think you need to make sure you enforce those policies and procedures, and not let them ever get lax. And when they do get lax, those are it's criteria for somebody to take into consideration of how well you're doing your job.
But in this case, it was my understanding the employee had privileges to be able to bring a computer in and out, and the guards aren't inspecting what data is on his computer, and therefore whatever policies or procedures that were in place at the gates aren't going to make any difference at all.
And I think it also points out two other things. The first off is, how are we designing our networks so that that kind of data, first off, needs, I don't even know the details of why he needs the data, to be honest with you. Why did he need to have this data that had that data field?
That's a good question. As an ex-VA employee myself, I used to work with the Office of Inspector General, and I spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, I was one of the first IT security auditors that the VA had created. The only time that anybody would want to have that type of information would probably be a OIG employee, which, from what I understand, the OIG, VA OIG, is looking into this anyway, for some type of analysis of an audit or investigation that they're doing. These individuals get their information out of a data source in Austin, Texas, and these people download the information and submit it across the network. Like you're saying, they get lax in their procedures and send this information to whoever needs it on the other end, the data analysts on the other end.
I always tell people, think in terms of the golden rule. If that's my data being transmitted, how would I want that to be protected?
Let's move on to another story this week, and that was the issue with Blue Security. Blue Security led its 522,000 users in an attack against spammers by flooding them with simultaneous return emails, and this led the spammers to counterattack with a denial of service that crippled millions of other websites. Rather than partake in an escalating war with the spammers, the company chose to close its doors. Let me start, Steve, with you. Does Blue Security deserve praise for its anti-spam efforts, or did the company go too far on this one?
Well, in my opinion, there is no need for vigilantism anywhere, whether that be in the real world or the internet world. There are better ways to go after spammers. There are technical efforts in place right now to try and come up with authentication methods for email, for verifying where emails came from and the headers, and other efforts for filtering. And there's no point in trying to go and strike back at those folks. They have far more resources and have much more incentive to fight back at you.
Well, I'd have to agree with Steve. I was looking for a particular quote on this one, and the only thing I could come up with was, "The road to hell is paved with good intentions." You know, I think the email spam issue is probably nothing more than a good debate. But you know, when you start taking on a vigilante approach, like as Steve mentioned, it's going to come back and haunt you. I mean, I think there's other filtering methods that are going to work. Look, you can walk out to your mailbox every day, and you're going to get all kinds of unsolicited mail. And what I do with it, my filter is I just chunk it into from one hand to the next, and it goes into the trash.
Yeah, I open my physical mail right next to my trash can so that I can get rid of most of it right away.
Susan, what do you think of all of this?
Well, there's one side of me that goes, gee, you know, go get them, go after them. The other side of me is like, well, you know, you're lowering yourself to that level. And that's not what I'd want a business to do. Mm-hmm. You know, don't fight fire with fire. Don't stoop to their level. And, you know, they do have, let's face it, they do have a lot more resources. They're spammers, all the malware writers, I mean, they're paying for vulnerabilities and exploits to get spam and malware on your systems. I mean, they've got more resources than a small firm. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, if you want to, you know, it's a great, you know, icon, if you will, for somebody who died in the line of fire, but unfortunately, I don't think they did it for the right thing.
Now, moving on to another story this past month, this one more recently, Microsoft was forced to acknowledge a new security hole, this time in its Word program. And Symantec actually raised its ThreatCon to level 2 after receiving reports that the flaw was being targeted by some attacks. Susan, let me start with you on this one. Even though these attacks seem to be targeted against specific individuals and not something widespread, do you see this as another incident that confirms that Zero Day is finally here, where attacks surface almost immediately after a flaw is disclosed?
As incidents.org said in their write-up of it, while you may not be targeted, what you should be doing is putting in place, making sure you have those layers in place so that when it does come to you, that you are ready and prepared. And they did point out, more than anything else, like we said in the earlier discussion about identity theft, educating those employees, having those policies in place, making sure that when that email comes in that just doesn't look right, mm-hmm. that somebody stops and says, wait a sec, what is this? There's something wrong here. And you know, I mean, we all have our relatives that send us the Bill Gates is going to send us a dollar, you know, and we're going to make millions. And we have to start educating people that there's bad guys out there that are making money, and we have to make a harden ourselves, put the layers in place to make sure that we're protected. Interestingly enough, and I just heard about this this morning, in fact, Windows Live OneCare, which is the more consumer-based one, that actually already has the protection in for the word exploit.
Well, Bill, I live in South Texas, and we have a lot of floods down here. And one of the things that people always mention when we're get inundated with heavy rains is when there's water across the road, don't make the attempt. And, you know, as Susan mentioned, we have to educate the users. You know, we've tried to educate these people not to make that trek across the road or across the water there. And how many times in the news do you see them pulling some car and an individual out of a car that's been taken away in the road? This even goes with the same thing with the emails. I mean, you can talk to the users until you're blue in the face, but until you can, find a way to say, okay, this really affects you, maybe by sending out your own type of email and say, you know, this is not something to open, and then they open it anyway, and it comes back to you with an alert, like the commercial that says you've got the pink slip virus or something like that. You're not going to hammer it into their heads that this is important.
Sure. Finally, let's turn to the controversy over a column Sean Wahlberg recently wrote for SearchSecurity.com, in which he worried that the CISSP certification could lose its luster because some colleges are now offering ISC squared coursework. Without getting too involved in the Wahlberg controversy, I'd like to ask what you all think the future holds for the CISSP certification, and if you think it's going to become more or less important for security professionals. Steve, let's start with you.
Well, first, just to address the subject a little bit, is I have no problem with colleges teaching computer security-related material. I think the problem with ISC squared and the CISSP right now is there is an experience requirement, and they allow people to take the test without proving the experience requirement. So then you go and you have people that pass the test and they don't have the experience, so then they don't get the credential, but they say, I passed the test. Well, they could solve this problem easily by simply requiring the experience first before letting you take the test. Now, as far as cheapening the certification or what the future is, I think it still has a decent future, but it's like any certification, even the MCSEs and some of the others, you have companies offering boot camps and everything else. People in the industry have to realize that it's not what certifications people have, but interview the people, find out what they know before you hire them, and you can tell whether or not somebody has the right experience or not.
Frank, you've had a lot to say about this in the past. Why don't you talk a bit about this in your view?
Well, the expectation that certification bestows knowledge to me is a misconception propagated by Fertility. Last week I spoke with Sean Harris about this, and she teaches and writes the book on CISSP boot camps. And she uses the word water down to describe basically that ISC squared offers two options for an individual to obtain CISSP. And as Steve mentioned, you know, even though they don't have the experience, it says here, they can use their college experience or college degree as part of that experience. I think people that pass the exam don't necessarily, they study for the exam, the CISSP exam, but they don't really have all of the knowledge. when they practice in a field. For instance, myself, okay, I'm right now working in a practical, technical end of it, and I very seldom do any physical security. I very seldom work on the physical security end of it. If I was to be asked some questions about physical security, would that make me less of a CISSP? I don't think so. I think having colleges offer the security courses and the CISSP is a step in the right direction. As Steve said, they're not going to be provided the credential until after they've proven that they've had the experience for this. But I just think it's a good thing, and I think it's a step in the right direction for CISSP.
We're just about out of time, so Susan, I'm going to give you the last word on this one.
I think on credentials, you nailed it earlier that you have to ask the individual, you have to interview the person. If you put your mind to anything, you can get a credential. The question is does that person then bring the proper mix of real-life experience, of book learning, to meet the needs of your engagement? And ask them, get that resume, get that CV, and look to see what else they've done, and ask for references.
Again, Susan Bradley, Steve Mensick, and Frank Kiniski, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at SearchSecurity.com/news, where you can sign up for our daily news email and our RSS feed. I'm Bill Brenner. Thanks for listening.